very much, honourable members. Good morning. Program that you received indicates that we were going to start at 9:30. Time has arrived. And the program is as follows. At 9:30 we were going to see Mr. Nkosi, who is a former General Manager, Labor Relations. Thereafter, we're going to see a Mr. Mabaso, who is a former Group Executive Human Resources. Thereafter, we're going to see Mr. Masinga, who deals with technology-related matters at the SABC, also a former employee. And then at 4 o'clock, we're going to see Ms. Nkulube, Ms. Pillay, Mr. Mvoko, and Mr. Kalata, who will be representing what has now been known as the SABC H. And then, of course, at the close of business, we'll indicate what the program is for Tuesday, for Wednesday, and for Thursday. So that's the program for this afternoon. It's a full day as usual, members, and thus we must start. We've not received any apologies from any member, no? No apologies. We're all here. Thank you very much. Honourable members? No, there's a standing apology for Honourable Waters. He's on other parliamentary business, so that's a standing apology that has been noted. Thank you very much. As has become a custom, Honourable Members, we want to bring you up to speed and seek your mandate in certain instances. We last met on Friday, so it's an update and a mandate where mandates are necessary. We've just gone through the program and nobody has indicated that they need the program changed, so that program will stand for the rest of the day. Honourable Members, we on Friday served summons on Professor Maguve. And I've been informed that that was duly done. So that's where it is in terms of the summons on Professor Maguve. Indications, as I'm sitting now, are that those summonses have been served. And we will take it from there. Honourable Members, on Saturday, Saturday the 10th of December, my office received a letter from Ingube Incorporated Attorneys, addressed to the chairperson, and it is headed Re-Inquiry by the Ad Hoc Committee into the Affairs of the South African Broadcasting Corporation and its Board of Directors. I want to summarize the four key elements that were raised and how I propose to respond, and with your mandate and with your wisdom, we will strengthen it and send it off, because as is practice from this office, we don't sit on correspondence. We want to send that correspondence out as soon as you've given us the mandate. Honourable Members, the first point they raise is we wish to reiterate that the SABC board is of the view that the inquiry must be fair and impartial. So that's the first point they raise. The second point they raise, the SABC wishes to inform ad hoc committee that on the 15th of December 2016, the SABC, and this is the important part, the SABC shall lead evidence and cross-examine all witnesses that we've called. I want to repeat, honourable members, their letter says the SABC shall lead and cross-examine all witnesses, and we'll deal with that in my proposed response. The third point they make in the letter is that they indicate, when I say they, I'm talking about the advocates, Ngube attorneys, that it's in the interest of the ad hoc committee that the SABC given an opportunity to participate in these proceedings, and we'll respond to that. The fourth point that they make is that should our rights to participate not be granted, the SABC shall exercise any right in the law or otherwise to enforce its rights. So that's the content of the letter, dated the 10th of December 2016 from Ngube Incorporated. Honourable members, I think you've been given a copy of this letter. The first thing that we must note is that this letter is not signed. It, in the letter, says electronically sent, not signed. So that's the letter and the concerns that they raised with the chairperson on Saturday, the 10th. And I indicated, honourable members, that I will, or we should respond before close of business today to keep the process smooth. And I want to put to you what I propose or how I propose to respond without giving you all the T's and the I's, but the sentiment, and then you could add to and or subtract from. I think the first point that we want to highlight, honourable members, is that in light of the fact that the SABC board is in court, where does the mandate derive? And who is going to pay for it? I think it's the first point that we must raise and we must consistently raise. On the point of they wish to reiterate that the process is fair and impartial. Honourable members, you'll recall that our very first letter and our very first utterances were that we will do everything in our power to make sure that it's transparent, that it's free, that it's fair, and in fact we have championed that. So we will reassure them that that's exactly what's going to happen, because that has been what the committee has said from day one. The third point that they raise, honourable members, is that on Thursday, the 15th of December, 2016, the SABC shall lead evidence and cross-examine all the witnesses called by the ad hoc committee throughout the inquiry, with the exception of the public protector, ICASA, and the Auditor General. For those three, they will just comment. But every other witness that has been called, they shall, on the 15th, lead and cross-examine. Honourable members, my own view is that Section 57 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, also Rule 167 of the Rules of Parliament, states that the National Assembly and its committees will determine our internal workings. We will determine and we will control our internal workings. Constitution Section 57, Rules of the National Assembly, says we shall determine and control, we being the committee. I did read to you the program that we've all adopted earlier on. And therefore, honourable members, my own view is that nobody will determine what this committee will do on the 15th or any other day. That's my view. Informed by the rules of Parliament and informed by the Constitution. So I am not inclined to grant them that. But I will be guided by you. In terms of the third point, that it is in the interest of this ad hoc committee that the SABC participate in the proceedings. I will continue, honourable members, to go back to what we did at the beginning. We wrote a letter to every potential witness, including the minister and the SABC board. And we indicated in that letter that we will call witnesses and the SABC board and the minister will have an opportunity to test the evidence given to us immediately. That letter was sent to the witnesses, to the board and to the minister. That immediately you will be granted an opportunity to interact with the evidence that has just been given to this committee. Everybody remembers that on the 7th of December, when we started these proceedings, the SABC board was in the meeting. And they chose to walk out of their own violation. When they would have been granted an opportunity to interact, they chose to walk out. And from where I'm sitting, I believe that is a forfeiture of their rights, at least to have interacted with those witnesses up to that point. But let me reiterate that all future witnesses that appear, they will have the right to interact with as and when the witnesses come. And for them, being the board and the minister, the invitation for them to attend all hearings still stands. The final point I want to make on that, honourable members, is that as we respond to that, I think it's incumbent upon this committee to make it absolutely clear to the SABC board and to Professor Maguve that they are walking out of this meeting on the 7th of December shows total disrespect for Parliament and the Constitution. And we should indicate that in our letter. Total disrespect for Parliament and the Constitution, that a body that accounts to this institution behaves in the manner that they've behaved. The final point, honourable members, that they raise about their rights to exercise whatever they deem necessary in the event that they do not get a satisfactory answer. I think we should say categorically that we respect the right of every South African citizen to do whatever they deem is important. So we have no problem with the SABC, we have no problem with Professor Maguve, we have no problem with any South African exercising their right if they think that what we have done to date would have infringed on any right. So that is how I intend to respond, honourable members. Unless you dictate otherwise, we will draft a letter accordingly, send it off to Nube Incorporated Attorneys, and indicate to them that they should respond to us by close of business on Tuesday, if they so wish. Let me open up for comment from members. I beg your pardon. I should, ma'am, sorry, ma'am Nkosi. We just had this in-house, we'll be 15 minutes. I'm so sorry that we've called you up. I beg your pardon, ma'am. Honourable Chauke, who's taking this? Chauke, Loliwe, everybody wants to speak? Yeah. All right. In light of everybody wanting to speak, can we agree that you are limited to no more than 2 minutes, if in your input? Once again, we'll start with Chauke, and we'll do as we normally do, Chauke, Killian, Loliwe and company, and then we'll end up with you, Honorable Mokoena. 2 minutes starts now, sir.
No, I'm not going to be long, Chair, but the point that I want to bring in is that what we have just alluded to, in fact, they demonstrate that there is total no respect to Parliament by the SABC together with the chairman of that board. We have given the SABC an opportunity to participate from the start of the hearing. Now, what has happened, Chair, is that when they left this meeting, they have not even notified the committee, neither yourself, that they are now leaving. They will not be participating. Throughout the whole hearing, Chair, you have made space available. You have made calls to check if SABC is present in the meeting. It's clear that there is no commitment from the side of the SABC. Now, my take, therefore, Chair, is that you need to be very clear to that executive of the SABC. This is public money that they're going to be spending. That is going to constitute what you call fruitless and wasteful expenditure to call any other witness again. That process has passed. My take, therefore, Chair, is that we must just be firm. We must not even accept to be bullied by SABC. They even determine the terms. They're telling us that, in fact, on the 15th, this is what they want to do. Where did you see this thing happening? Now, they have undermined the authority of Parliament. They have undermined the constitution of the country. And I think that I stick to our guns that day, because they are given that opportunity, will not be able to give them any other opportunity to call witnesses again. Those witnesses, they were here, they were supposed to be here, they were not here. SABC was supposed to be here from the start to the end of this process. So they must not treat us like we school children who don't know what we are doing. We know our role here, and therefore I'm saying that take it in the manner that you have just outlined and make it very clear to them. We are not going to be bullied by them.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to concur with the sentiments expressed by Honorable Chauke. I would just like to add that I think it's important for us to say also that they have the right in law once we have completed the process, obviously, as you have indicated, to approach a court. But we must also make it abundantly clear that it should be done at the cost of those individuals who are affected. Because we don't have a core rate board, no board can take a decision to fight any matter in court. And therefore, those who are taking the matter on review will have to do it, and they have to fund those processes by themselves. Fact of the matter is, the SABC made a 400 million loss in the last financial year, and it is important that we stop the looting of resources at the SABC, and this committee is really set on doing just that. So I think it's very important that they must get the message. We are bending over backwards to give them an opportunity. We have done so. Henceforth, they can continue, but we won't go back in the process. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Oliwe.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I agree with my colleagues. I see this letter as just a way of grandstanding by the institution. There's no way that for the whole of last week we have been extending a hand to them saying anyone who wants to question witnesses can take that opportunity and do so. And now they make it as if they were deprived of doing this. We have granted them that, and we are not going back to where we started because they decided to walk out when they were afforded an opportunity to be part of this particular process. As this committee, we adopted a program, and we are going to move according to our adopted program. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Khoza.
Chair, I agree with you, and I think the
I'm sure the entire committee concurs with you. I don't think this level of impunity should be tolerated. Whatever tactics that SABC is going to be coming up with, we need to brace up for that, Chair. And we should not tolerate that. In the first instance, they are in contravention of Section 55 of the Constitution. All organs of state are accountable to Parliament. No organ of state is exempted from this, and I think it is absolutely important that we send this message to SABC and they understand that they have forfeited their right to cross-examine the witnesses when they were given the opportunity to do so. And going forward, yes, they may come back. It's up to them. If they decide to come back, but this is not going to stop this train.
Honourable Fandar.
Thanks, Chair. I agree with previous speakers. From day one, they were allowed to be here. On day one, all 17 people actually that are here from the SABC staged a dramatic walkout in complete disrespect of this committee. As you've said, the invitation still stands. But I actually don't think that letter was sent on good faith. Because if they'd realized their error, they shouldn't have walked out, they would now like to be given the opportunity to interview witnesses. Where are they? They're not here. So I view that letter as yet another delaying tactic. We should not steer off course. We're going to continue with our work. They were given the opportunity and they still are. If they want to, they must come.
Honourable Masang.
Chair, thank you. I like the fact that they wrote this letter on the day on which we're celebrating the 20th anniversary of the Constitution. Indeed, this confirms that our Constitution and people are really trying to exercise their rights. But on a serious note, Chair, the first question that comes into mind, because I listened to what you have said, you're saying the SABC would like to do this. The first question that comes to mind is, who is this SABC? It's a very important question. But the second issue that, Chair, that colleagues have already said, every day we've allowed them to be in the meeting and to engage with the process, they elected to abandon the process. Their decision, and I think we respect their decision and we will make informed decisions based on what we have heard and their decision to elect. But we must, for record, indicate that their bullying tactic is reprehensible. It is unacceptable. And my view is that theirs is an egregious action or attempt to undermine the process, a constitutional process as well as a legal process. And I guess they, as the colleague have said, I think they can proceed with the process as they like, but no state money or public money should be used. If they want to do it out of their own pockets, granted. So the monkey tricks, I think, must come to an end.
Honourable Swart.
Thank you, Chair. I still have and I'm sure many members have a very open mind about this inquiry and the outcome of the inquiry, but I do find this letter very disturbing and the way the SABC has conducted itself from walking out, from the chairperson not responding to our letters and then us having to issue a summons to have him appear, and now this letter. I find it outrageous. In the many years that I have been in Parliament, I have never seen an institution that says here, the SABC shall lead evidence and cross-examine on the day that they choose. I've never seen that before. So, Chair, whilst they have got certain rights, to dictate to Parliament is totally unacceptable, and I'm in total agreement with my colleagues across all political parties, let it be added, that find this outrageous. I am in agreement with you that Section 57 of the Constitution and Rule 167 of the Rules of Parliament say we, Parliament, dictate our rules and that an institution like the SABC is accountable to us. So I'm in total agreement with the sentiments expressed by my colleagues. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Mukwena.
Thanks, Chair. I think the first thing is that Ncube attorneys need to explain to us who gave them instructions. Because for all we know, they could be getting instructions from the cleaner at the SABC. Maybe they're getting it from Claudio Mutwene, who doesn't have a legal foot to instruct anyone to speak to Parliament. Whoever whoever Ncube attorneys is representing, they need to explain to us. Because the effect of that is that if indeed it is a member of this defunct board, then they must show us a resolution that was taken by the board to appoint this legal body to represent them here. Because if they can't do that, then it means that they are spending money of the SABC unlawfully. And we must then go back and say they must pay back that money from their own personal pocket. Whoever instructed Ncube attorneys to come and write us this frivolous letter here must take personal responsibility for that letter that they've written. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, honourable members. We shall draft a letter encapsulating all your sentiments. That letter will go out. I'm looking at the legal team. If you can assist us, that letter should go out by close of business today. The final point, honourable members. On Saturday, and I keep on raising this thing of Saturday, I'm not sure if Saturday is a working day. I don't know. But on Saturday, we received more than 400 documents from the SABC via email, purportedly being documents that we required in preparation for our work. So we are processing those documents to try and ascertain exactly what they contain, and at the earliest convenience we will share them with you, that these 400 documents represent these aspects of what we require from the SABC. It's going to be a very tall order, but I'm sure with the team we'll be able to give you some indication what those documents are. I just find it very strange that documents, letters, all sorts of things that could hamper our work get sent on a weekend. I find it strange that those things happen over the weekend. But I thought, let me raise that with you, and we will try and get them. Hopefully you'll get some so that you can prepare for the proceedings from tomorrow onwards. I doubt you'll get any for today, but bear with us. So those 400, the team is busy working on them, and you shall get them as soon as we can get them through to you. Having said that, Ms. Nkosi, apologies that you had to go through the normal housekeeping routine. but please be welcome to our hearing. Former General Manager of Labour Relations. And now that you're here, Ms. Nkosi, please be informed that by law you are required to answer fully and satisfactorily all questions lawfully put to you, or to produce any document that you are required to produce in connection with the subject matter of the inquiry. Notwithstanding the fact that the answer or the document could incriminate you or expose you to criminal or civil proceedings or damages. You are, however, protected in that evidence given under oath or affirmation before a House or committee may not be used against you in any court or place outside of Parliament, except in criminal proceedings concerning a charge of perjury or a charge relating to the evidence or documents required in these proceedings. Mr. Nkosi, I've been informed that you have opted to take the oath, so if you could repeat after me, put your mic on. I swear by Almighty God.
I swear by Almighty God.
That the evidence I shall give.
The evidence that I shall give.
Will be the truth.
Will be the truth.
The whole truth.
The whole truth.
And nothing but the truth.
And nothing but the truth.
Please say so, help me God.
So help me God.
Thank you very much. Mr. Vanara, it's just past 11 o'clock. Can you... past 10 o'clock, I beg your pardon. Can you try and get through your proceedings by 10:45, Mr. Vanara, if it's at all possible? Then we'll allow members again. Maybe Mr. Honorable Mokwena, prepare because we'll start with you. Okay. Advocate.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to Ms. Ngozi. Ms. Ngozi, can you, for the record, just tell the committee your full particulars?
Okay. My name is Mandiwe Ngozi. And as you already said, I am the former General Manager of Employee Relations at the SABC. Currently, I'm unemployed.
When do you start... working for the SABC, and when was your relationship with the SABC terminated?
So I started the SABC in 2011, the 1st of July 2011, and my last working day was the 28th of September of 2016.
What was the position that you held?
I started at the SABC, and at the time I left the SABC, I still was the General Manager of Employee Relations. Same as Labor Relations, I think, as indicated, just semantics.
Can you explain to the committee what that role entailed and to whom did you report to?
Okay, so my responsibilities are basically twofold. I deal with individual disputes of the SABC, and I deal with all matters of collective bargaining, as I am heading the Employee Relations Department. I report to the, or at least used to report to the Group Executive Human Resources. So I would give advice that is labor law, labor relations related to all and sundry, including the executives of the SABC, as well as all the employees of the SABC. So in a nutshell, if the matter goes to the Labor Court or CCMA, or there's a disciplinary inquiry, there would be some level of advice that I give to the SABC.
I would like us to focus on the dispute resolution function. You are aware that there has been quite a number of group executives that recently had their relationship with the corporation terminated. I would like you to just tell us the circumstances and your role in those instances. I'm referring to Mr. Itani Tsesi. I'm referring to Ms. Duaka, Ms. Jabu Mabaso, Leslie Ntoko, and the former Chief Audit Executive.
So, as I indicated before, mostly my role would be that of advising the SABC on the processes that need to be taken. And I should hasten to say that the advice that I would give is obviously dependent upon what is before me, that which is given to me for me to advise. And so in respect of the executives that you have mentioned, and perhaps if I could start with SIPO just briefly, is that I advised on SIPO's, I'm not sure where to start, but on SIPO's transaction, I'll call it that for purposes of this.
Sorry, who's SIPO?
SIPO Masinga would have been the group executive of technology within the SABC. So I normally get called in for such positions by the executive directors of the SABC, in this instance mostly by the then COO of the SABC, Mr. Claude Mutsune. And in most cases, he would either be with the CFO, Mr. James Aguma, or he would be with Anton Yenes, and we'll come to the details later. But I'd like to just summarize quickly the involvement with SIPO Masinga. So I get called in by the COO, of course, and could have been one executive director, because there's an allegation against him on what he ought to have done as the group executive or what he failed to do as the group executive. And of course, as a responsible labor relations person, I would want to know the substance behind the whatever it is that I'm asked to advise on. And of course, I would either be told or given the information to say, no, these are the reasons, and I would of course want to see evidence so that when I advise, it's in context to what is before me. So in this case, I think I'm told that there is evidence, but of course evidence does not get given to me, and I'm therefore asked to advise on the process of the decision seems to have been made already, that on the basis of the allegations at hand, he must be suspended. So, of course, and as I already said, I would ask for evidence, and no, don't worry about the evidence. We have the evidence. Just tell us what the correct process is to do the right thing. So mostly I would get at the point where mostly I would advise, well, at least insofar as most of these transactions are concerned, about the process. And mostly, in any case, it's something that I'm passionate about, both process and substance, because they have impact on each other. And in this instance, a decision is made. He must go, just give us the template, make sure that it's the right template that gets him to go.
Now,
I'm not going to get into... Sorry?
Sorry to rudely interrupt you. Who takes that decision? Who tells you that? Who communicates the decision to you?
Well, it would be, for instance, the COO, Mr. Mutsuneng. And as I said, in this instance, I remember vividly it was him and it was Anton Yenes. Anton is a person that used to be the executive. He used to be the group executive of commercial, who is and I'm subject to being corrected, who is currently the advisor, the commercial advisor, and he features in almost everything at the SABC, supporting, I suppose, the executive directors. So he was there indicating, you know, what it is that SIPO, you know, did or is alleged against him.
So you called in to provide advice. What is your advice?
So my advice is that, well, I don't have the full appreciation of the evidence, but if there is evidence against him that is compelling, of course there are certain things that we need to do or ask, whether he's going to interfere with the witnesses. In fact, that would be the standard question on anybody that gets suspended by the SABC, whether there is, you know, that there's a potential of them interfering with the witnesses, You know, how serious is the matter? You know, there would be a number of issues that I would ask before, because naturally I'm wanting to defend the SABC's interest such that when you are taken to court, you're not found wanting. So, of course, I then indicate that, well, with whatever is in front of me, which is not a complete picture, I will assist you and I will give you a template that indicates the process because I don't know the substance. However, obviously, somebody has to answer on the substance when it comes to whatever challenge that the SABC may have. But I also need to indicate that charges were drafted against him. He was eventually charged. He was suspended, charged, and right in the middle of the process, which is the correct process to charge an employee, obviously, to give them an opportunity to state their case, the process was abandoned. And how the process gets to be abandoned in this case is that I then get called in to be told that, in fact, there's more evidence that has come and it requires for us to terminate his services summarily. So then I, of course, get curious about why would we terminate an employee's contract without taking them through a disciplinary process where they need to defend themselves. And the answer was no, there's serious evidence that has come. But what is the evidence? No, there are things that he's doing on the side that may jeopardize SABC. But it's sketchy for me. So I'm like, no, I don't agree. Anyway, whether there was evidence or not, the correct process is to take an employee to a hearing where they have an opportunity to defend their case and state their case. So then the following day I get to be called in by the COO again in the presence of the legal advisor from the Minister of Communications office, Dan Mancha. That's the, to say that they had gotten, meaning the COO had gotten advice from him to terminate. Then we argue about the modalities of how that would work out, and obviously I then state the fact that I do not agree, and I indicate to him that he should know as a lawyer himself that my interest is in employment law, and therefore that's where you give an employee an opportunity. We get told to go outside and just draft the letter to terminate. We do go outside to the boardroom of the COO, and I tell the legal advisor, of course, that me and you don't agree, so I'm not going to be able to be assisting you, but feel free to tell me what you need. I'll give it to you because I'm not going to be part of it. Indeed, I do that. So I give him the charges because that was part of the responsibility I had to ensure that charges were drafted. But it, you know, because there was a lawyer that was briefed to assist us with drafting that. And that process was abandoned. SIPO took us, meaning the SABC, and pardon me for saying us, I sometimes forget that I'm no longer at the SABC. So when I say us, I mean the SABC, and I could be corrected there, I'm sorry. So, of course, the SABC then loses the case on the basis of unfairness because you can't terminate. Exactly what we said. We take the matter to appeal. When I say we, it does not necessarily mean that I had agreed that the matter should be taken on appeal because I also knew that we were going to lose the case. But the matter then goes, and of course SABC loses the case at court for obvious reasons. I think I've already stated those. And then at some point, the SABC then decides to settle the matter with SIPO without him having gone through the entire process. And but to also just mention the feature that was interesting was also the anger that he caused around challenging the MOI, because at some point I think SIPO, the Memorandum of Incorporation at the SABC that was actually signed by the minister. And my interpretation is that probably that's exactly why the legal advisor of the Minister of Communication was maybe brought in, but I am speculating, was brought in perhaps to deal with the part of the MOI because SIPO was also challenging how he got dismissed without the board having approved his dismissal. It was after the MOI was changed, and therefore he was saying that the changing of the MOI was illegal, and I think he was seen to have overstepped his territory as an employee now to be getting over into a territory of an MOI for the minister.
Okay. Whilst SIPO is on suspension, do you know whether or not he is receiving his salary, firstly? Secondly, what was the duration of his suspension?
Sorry, I think I'm going to be incorrect if I tell you exactly the number of months. But I can tell you it would have been something about a year. SIPO had been on suspension and he was paid. And I will just also save you time to inform you that others were also suspended that I would mention unpaid, you know, whilst they were at home. And the periods would, of course, range from 14 months to any other thing whilst they're on suspension, something that would, of course, bother me as a practitioner in employee relations, that employees get paid whilst they're at home.
Okay, enough about SIPO now. Can we move to another executive?
So, okay, let me talk about Peps Idani. Mr. Idani's AEC was the group executive of risk. He was group risk at the SABC. And, you know, because of the newspaper, the article that went out about the finances of the SABC, he was a suspect, you know, having leaked the information allegedly. And, of course, the same thing was done. And I think I was caught by surprise because, you know, I think people were talking around me, you know, in parables, and I'm not sure why, but eventually, and I'm going to cut the long story short, I understood he was not the only one who was suspended for having allegedly leaked the information. I think there were four of them, but he was the only group executive, and I think therefore he then becomes the point about the executives, not that others were not important. But in this case, his case is peculiar in the sense that there was an investigation, of course, and I kept on asking about the outcome of that investigation from the COO at the time, and of course I'm sure by now we know who the COO at that time was, and I won't go on and mention the name. You know, so I would get the assurance that, no, the investigation is going on, we just are waiting. But who's conducting the investigation? Because some of these things I have to report on, especially when the parliamentarians and the AG and whoever that cares to know asks, I am the first point of contact about suspensions and all of those. So I need to know what is going on at any given point. So it only later came to my attention, I think it would have been about 12 months down the line when, you know, I'd been brushed off about where the, you know, where this matter is. And I basically learned that he was cleared of the allegations. But I think there was a very peculiar discomfort about having him to come back, you know, because he was a risk, as a group executive of risk, who has been alleged of leaking, he was a risk. So he can't come back, although he had been cleared of the charges. So then I got to learn that actually the people that were doing the investigation were the State Security Agency. Of course, I was concerned about that, but that information, of course, did not come to me as official as it was supposed to be coming. I gathered at some point through colleagues that, in fact, of course, this was hidden away from me, or it was forgotten for one reason or the other, that in fact the people that were doing the investigation was the State Security Agency, something that is unfamiliar to me. I don't think I've ever heard of it until the time, and I think around the time of my leaving the SABC, which is September, I think Itani was also then leaving the SABC, but he had been on full pay throughout the plus minus 14 months himself.
Let's get to another executive.
Then, I think I think I was starting to be an irritation, so because I would ask the questions and disagree, and you know, then there was that sense that when I don't agree, then you know, the work that I'm supposed to be doing would be taken to legal instead, and I'm sure you've kind of seen the picture of the SABC, because the people that are in legal are mostly the commercial lawyers. But whatever it is that I needed to do to advise on issues that pertain to labor, then would be taken to legal. Therefore, I'm saying that I'm not going to have much contribution on Duarga, because that was handed over to legal. And then subsequently there was an issue about, I think, Jabulani Mabaso, who was my boss, my daughter Shushu, Leslie, and they were to be charged. But at the point of, because I was also asking questions about my daughter and not necessarily agreeing with the report, and that transaction was also taken away from me. I mean, I've been dealing with executives throughout my life. But it was taken away to say, no, but you can't now deal with executives. Okay, which is fine. I do accept and understand. However, I think on the case of one executive, Mbulu Nefumbada, that she was the head of legal herself. So something very quick actually happened there. I understood that she was supposed, and it was the time that Jimmy Matthews was still the acting GCEO, and I was to advise on, you know, Mbulu her position has to be downgraded. Okay, but what are the reasons? No, she was never an executive in the first place in terms of DEF. DEF is the Delegation of Authority framework of the SABC. But no, Jimmy, the lady is there in terms of DEF. There's nothing wrong with the DEF. That's how she was appointed. Why would we, as the SABC, want to demote her? But in those interactions, it was very clear how uncomfortable the acting GCEO was. And, I mean, we had an honest conversation to say, but why are we doing this? What is going on? What is the problem? So Jimmy actually said, well, Mandy, you know how it is. The person that really is getting me to get this right is the COO. Okay, so this is not your decision, and this person is supposed to be reporting to Jimmy. So it has to happen, and it has to happen. I remember quite well that around July, then she was told, and at this point, I think because of the relationship that I've had with her as the person that is in legal, and myself as the person that actually does the labor law part, side of things, we normally would interact and talk about what needs to happen, how, and to exchange views. So I think people were just careful around how they give me information, and therefore I was excluded up to a point where I got to know that she had been offered 6 months, I think, and was told that if you don't take it, you are going to be charged. So I asked her, what have you done? Why would you be charged? And she said, I don't know. So because I asked her directly now, it was a matter that concerned me, not just only as a, but again, it's about protecting the interests of the SABC. Eventually, she was I think she managed to negotiate herself out of, but she did not know why she was going to be charged. The long and short is that in any case, something strange that happened in that transaction as well is that she was told in front of her colleagues, her reportees, direct reports, on the day that you are not a group executive. And unfortunately, I was part of that, not knowing what was going to be discussed, which I found quite shocking. It's nothing that I've ever experienced in my life, that a group executive is told on the day that they are demoted. In any case, they were not supposed to be there because the death was incorrect. And when I joined the SABC, there was a group executive of legal and appointed correctly in terms of death, but in her case, you know. So that was the other one.
Okay. Let's get to the reporting lines. In some of these matters, you get to be removed because the people involved are your seniors, the group executives. Now, you are reporting to the group executive, Human Resources.
Yes.
Who was at a level equivalent to the group executives involved. Were these matters taken away from you, referred to be dealt with by the group executive HR together with legal, or were they simply transferred from your office to legal?
Okay, so it just depends on the day. So, for instance, sometimes I would just hear from my colleagues, my direct reports, that there's a matter that of an executive that I'm dealing with, which I do not know anything about. But I kind of figured immediately why. Either I would not be doing something, or my boss at the time, the group executive of HR, would not be involved in the transaction. In fact, he himself was kind of removed from dealing with many issues for one reason or the other. I'm sure he will talk for himself in respect of why and whatever happens. But sometimes I would, of course, not ask much because I'm the specialist and the head of employee relations. Sometimes he would, in any case, have to come to me. But that's not my call to make. So if a person then decides that today this matter is not going to be handed to you, it gets taken to whoever for whatever reason, I would not know. What I do know, though, is that one of the issues that are quite embarrassing, and I know that you haven't asked me about it, is the issue of the 7 journalists, maybe the 8 journalists, where, you know, I think that the fact that I was not in agreement with the whole transaction was also an irritation, to the extent that there was I was told that I was, or whatever that happens, has to happen in the presence of the legal person. And I'm not sure how, where that came from. And so if I get involved in advising, you know, a person that was acting as head of legal would be imposed to say, if she advises, you must be there. And would ask the person, well, what are you doing here? What do you know about my area? Not that you don't, but what is the relevance of your being here when I had been doing this work for all this time? So I figured that probably I have become an irritation because I would ask and not agree, and I became very irrelevant.
Let's quickly go to the former chief audit executive. Can you just briefly touch on the circumstances surrounding a termination of service?
Okay, so with the, and that would be Ms. Lorraine Francois. So I learned that because I was called by the two executives at the time, the executive directors. It was James, the CFO, and and Jimmy as the acting GCO at the time. And at the time, it was when the COO was not at the SABC. And so my understanding is that she went and she made whatever representations that she made to the audit committee, the committee of the board, regarding the irregularities around the transactions that were done by the CFO. The detail of that, or the exact detail, I can't say I had, although I was called in to also advise on the best process to follow when you suspend a person, as I always do. What is the correct process? Why must it be done? How must it be done? And I mean, there's always this notion that our process is that you need to give an employee time to say why they should not be suspended. But every time I have to convince the powers that be that this process has to be done. We can't skip a process because we're going to be found wanting. It was the case with Lorraine as well. In fact, to the extent that the COO, when he came back, told me that he was told that I had leaked information in respect of Lorraine Francois' suspension. And why would I do that? I have no idea until today. However, she was suspended, I think for about 6 months, and because there was no appetite of having her back any time, and I think she had remained with a period that I think was acceptable, so to speak, to the SABC to pay her off, and therefore she was paid off, I think, the remainder of her contract, which from December to June, which is the time that the contract was. So she was not charged, she was on suspension, full paid, and she was paid the remainder of her contract, and that was it.
Okay. To be fair to the board, perhaps before we get there, in your normal processes, you indicated that you had to report to the AG, to report to Parliament. Of course, those reports would not leave from your desk or your office directly to these institutions. Can you tell us what was the process of processing these labor disputes? Did they ever get to the board? Not talking about the ones we've just discussed. I'm just asking about the process in general.
Okay, so you, for instance, would have people like Idani who report to the risk committee. You would have people like Lorraine who reports directly to the audit committee. And in the normal course of things, you, for instance, should have me report to the group executive who would present these matters to the HR committee and then the subsequent relevant committees that these people or these group executives report to. That's the normal course of things. However, I must also mention that with the change in the DEF, the Delegation of Authority framework, informed by the amendments to the MOI, it meant that in respect of the disciplinary processes, the executive directors were now in charge of the whole, you know. For instance, you would have had to ask, if you were to charge an executive director or the group executive, you would have had to ask a committee, a chairperson of the committee or whatever committee or the board, to give you approval to charge a group executive. So as a result of the change in the MOI, the impact then became seen in the DEF or translated to the DEF, such that the group executives, I mean the directors themselves, the executive directors, are now given that power of the board for them to decide on any matter that has to do with the discipline, which is what SIPO, as I said, challenged. So in the normal course of things, that's how things would work in a nutshell.
Now, in respect of the executives we've just discussed, I'm not sure at what stage was the MOI changed, which had an impact on DEF, but were some of these suspensions, charges, and settlements ever brought to the attention of the board?
So, because I do not sit at the board meetings, I would not be able to say with confidence, yay or nay, about whether or not they actually served there as whether information or any other matter. I think the group executive of human resources would be in a better position to indicate whether or not in the HRM, for instance, subcommittee of the board, any of these actually served, because mine is to inform him of the operations and legalities or any other aspect around those matters, and I would give to him. Sometimes not, because sometimes the instruction would be report to me as the COO and leave the rest.
Lastly, ma'am, you left the SABC recently. Are you at liberty to share with the committee the circumstances or the reasons why you're no longer at the SABC?
So just briefly, I think it had everything to do with the integrity that I thought I still had and perhaps I still wanted to have as I left the SABC. I think it was hurtful, you know, to hear whether it is the journalists, whether it's 702, you know, radio stations, you know, to ask about what is going on at the SABC. Where is the head? Do they even have labor relations department when these things happen? But over and above is the fact that I had been told in my face that there's no trust relationship or there's no longer confidence. In fact, I had already seen the norm, the practice, what was becoming the normal practice, that, you know, certain matters would be either taken away from me, as I said before, given to legal, and I think, as I said before, that I was becoming an irritation, or I had become an irritation because I would not agree with certain things, and I knew that at that time I was a stumbling block. So I decided that rather than being forced out or rather than challenging the SABC on constructive dismissal, whatever the case is, and I then went to the acting group executive to say, look, clearly I'm no longer wanted here. Can we talk? Let's be matured about it and talk. It fell on very fertile soil. The rest is history.
So who told you in your face that you were no longer needed?
Well, it's basically, other than the fact that I'm sure I'm old enough to get the cues, you know, been there for 5 years, but it was confirmed actually by the current acting group executive of HR, you know, that, you know, the powers that be don't give you the cases anymore because, you know, you don't give them the kind of advice they want or they've lost faith. I don't know. But when I got that sense because it was said. You know, it's not in fact that the sense it was said that, and I could see it, that the cases get taken away from me. They get to be given to legal, and it seemed that the legal department was delivering. I don't know, but I'm just saying that it was more keen, or they were more keen to actually get their matters resolved as best as the SABC wanted them to be resolved.
Thank you, ma'am. No further questions.
Thank you, Advocate Venara. Mr. Nkosi, were you given a golden handshake?
Well, depending what that is.
You're given a severance package.
I actually asked whether they could talk to me about settlement, that separation money. I asked for that, and as I said, it fell on fertile soil.
And how long was the remainder of your contract?
So the remainder of my contract was 21 months.
And you got in excess of R1 million in terms of your settlement, yes or no?
Yes.
Over to you, Honorable Thongwana. You've got 5 minutes starting now. I beg your pardon, it's Monday, sir. It's Monday. Honorable Mokwena, you've got 5 minutes. I beg your pardon.
Thank you, Chair. Are you well, ma'am?
I am well. Thank you very much.
Just to establish, have you been threatened by anybody, either legally or otherwise, for your presence here?
Not yet.
Okay, excellent. So, I just missed one point. You said in the dismissal of SIPO, in that meeting that you had with the legal advisor, and there was an instruction from the minister. No?
No. So there was no instruction from the minister. There was just a legal advisor from the Minister of Communications office, namely Lungisani Manja.
Okay.
The instruction, I did not understand it to have come from the minister,
from the minister
herself.
Okay.
No.
The MOI, the amendment to the MOI, which then effected the changes to the delegation of authority framework, literally gave the powers to, and I will say in particular, the COO, to run amok in the SABC. Would you agree with that?
It definitely gave the powers to the three executive directors to do.
Is it my understanding that most of these dismissals that you're talking about were effected by the COO?
Certainly, I would say directly and indirectly. The example I made, of course it was not a dismissal, but it was a push out, at least in respect of the head of legal, because as I said, when I spoke to James, who was the acting group executive, not James, rather Jimmy Matthews, he indicated that it was in the interest of the COO.
Okay.
That's what he said to me. And the others where I had a direct talk to him, in fact, it was mostly driven from his office.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Side question. The New Age deal, did it happen in your tenure?
HD.
The New Age deal. The.
Oh, New Age deal.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I'm not sure when it happened. It could have been.
But certainly you saw it.
Because I started in 2011.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You saw it unfold. Although you didn't know,
I was not involved with the intimate details.
Yeah.
So it was a side thing for me that I was not particularly interested.
No,
in.
The reason why I'm asking is because it's becoming interesting. The MOI becomes gets amended. It gives powers to the COO, and I will say the COO because each and every case that we've heard here, it seems that it is the COO who has pushed people away. It gives the COO the power to hire and fire, right? The New Age deal happens. So it seems to me that this MOI was a tool to clear this illegal thing of the New Age. But I'm interested in another issue. The transfer of Mr. Hlaudi from the Free State to headquarters in Johannesburg. Did it happen in your tenure?
No, it didn't. When I got to the SABC, I think the COO then, okay, let me correct me. So when I got to the SABC, Mr. Hlaudi Motsweneng was the GM stakeholder relations.
Okay, and this is the time in which he was sitting in board meetings?
I suspect so. Remember, I don't sit in board meetings,
yes.
But yes, my understanding is that at some point he acted as group executive, stakeholder relations, where I understand he was sitting in board meetings.
Okay, just one last question, because I know the chair is going to stop me now. How much money do you have like a round figure of how much money the SABC could have lost in these frivolous suspensions of people staying 14 months? And I will mention as well, this is it's an interesting thing. It's an interesting trend that I've seen also in the Free State of these frivolous suspensions while deals are happening.
Honorable Mokoena, I do not have the exact figure.
Yeah.
I will tell you this, though, that it is a lot of money. I will not be shy to tell you that, as I said, it worries you as the practitioner in labor relations, the exodus that is fruitless, in my view, that is happening, using your word, Chairperson, the handshakes, and people sitting at home, not working. It pains me. It used to pain me that we had to answer and say, you know, why people are sitting at home.
Yeah.
It's also against the fairness in general, because, as they say, justice delayed is justice denied.
Yeah.
So in all levels, it has not been fair.
You can add to it as you answer other questions, whatever you want to say. We're not stopping you, but time is of the essence. But as you respond to other questions, you can build on what you wanted to say now. Honorable Masala.
Chair, thank you, Madam Mayor. So from what you are saying, from all these people that we're talking about, you could summarize it by saying that there were no fair labor practices.
At least in respect of the group executives, I think I could say that with confidence, because I've actually seen and experienced it. In respect of the most employees of the SABC, where there has not been any interference, where a process is a simple process of an employee having done something wrong, I can tell you that the processes mostly have been fair, at least insofar as my involvement has been concerned.
What would you say were the reasons for these people who were not treated fairly, who, for a lack of a better word, we could say they were purged from SABC? What were the reasons? What is behind all these actions, would you say?
Well, that would definitely be speculation on my part, because I don't know. What I do know, though, is that most of these people here are people who have stood their ground in respect of how taking personally the interests of the SABC and ensuring that things are done correctly. I'd like to think, I could be wrong, but my opinion is that these are the people that had been fighting to do the right things at the SABC.
And who would replace those people after they are removed? Just you know, I know it's a complex matter, but I just want if you are able to.
So, look,
okay.
The executive directors
are
basically making decisions about who needs to go where, how, when, how, why, and all of that. And incidentally, the people that are there are those that would have been, whether directly or indirectly, would have the then COO would have been happy with. Now, my opinion.
Now, you said there was an investigation carried out by
State Security.
What were they investigating?
I have no clue. But they did their work under the guise of looking at the leakage. Remember the issue of the suspended people related to the leakage of the information of the SABC's financials. So my understanding is that that's what they were looking for. I don't understand the scope of their investigation and why it was them that was investigating. I cannot tell you that, but it was strange.
And I think, I guess you know what the mandate of the COO is at SABC, if you can, if you don't mind, just to elaborate. What actually is the mandate of that position?
The mandate of the position, the question
COO.
Is a bit broad there, if you could, Honorable, please help me.
It includes all these other things that we have picked up, labor relations issues.
So, of course, in the normal course of things, for instance, there would be things that are supposed to be dealt with by the group executive of HR to assist any other group executive or executive director. But mostly you find them reside within the COO, which is something that is unusual, again, because, for instance, you would have people like the legal, and I'll just talk the function. The function, in fact, let me put it this way, that the group executive of HR, who I'm sure is going to say exactly what I'm saying, is that he could not do what he's required to do, yet his function reports to the CEO naturally, you know. But for one reason or the other, nothing happens at the SABC without the blessing of Mr. Motsoene.
Chair, thank you.
I thank you, sir. Beg your pardon, Honorable Swartz.
Thank you very much for your input. Would it then be correct to say that the State Security Agency was asked by Mr. Motsoene to investigate that leakage?
That was my understanding, sir.
And have you ever experienced the involvement of the State Security Agency before in any matters of the SABC? It seems startling to me that you would have the State Security Agency involved in investigating the public broadcaster.
We have an internal investigating unit at the SABC called Internal Audit. Well, the side of forensics. Those are the people that normally investigate our cases. And as I indicated, this for me was strange. In fact, it was not just strange at the SABC. Throughout my career, I've worked in other places as well.
From my side, I find it quite startling and shocking.
Yes.
But that's besides the point. Can I just move on to the... interesting, just to substantiate your indication of the role of Mr. Motsoene in the suspension of members, and it seems to be pulling the strings behind the scenes, that is in line with the findings of the public protector. In fact, to quote one of her findings, Mr. Motsoene purged senior staff members, leading to the loss of millions of rands on unnecessary settlements for irregular terminations of contracts of employment. Would you agree with that finding?
I would want to agree, given that which I have said about the executives that I have already mentioned.
Thank you. Your role in the disciplinary action against Mr. Motsoene himself, were you at all involved in that process?
The process that took place about...
Recently, yes.
No, I wasn't.
And why would that be, seen as you're head of the labor and having been involved in many of the matters?
It was outsourced.
But your witnesses would obviously, the witnesses would have come from inside the SABC.
It was outsourced, sir. The level of my involvement, or perhaps my department's involvement, is when I shamefully sent one of my team members to go and ensure that the process in terms of whatever it is that the person that was briefed, because they had to come back and report on how the matter was finalized. That was the extent of the involvement of my department. Otherwise, in terms of the arrangements and other things, in fact, it was more administrative than any other thing. Very menial.
I understand that, and it might well have been in terms of the court order that it had to be outsourced to be to ensure that there was independence. But the public protector also had an interesting finding relating to that that disciplinary action, where they said whilst the board did not initiate the disciplinary action, it only did this after the court application was instituted. The process also was malicious compliance, as key witnesses were not called and important evidence was not produced. Would you be able to comment on that? But probably not, because you weren't involved in the process itself.
I'd be very reluctant to comment, precisely because of your last point there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all from my side. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you so much, sir. Honourable Khoza.
Thank you, Ms. Kosi. Ma'am, I would imagine that your primary responsibility was to maintain labor peace in your organization. And obviously, you were also responsible for driving the strategy and respect of that area. Is that correct?
Correct, ma'am.
Okay. From 2011 to 2016, what were the key cost drivers or risk factors that you identified in your area of responsibility at SABC?
Wow. So I think one of the things that I really wanted to deal with, and this is exactly why I had indicated the interest I had about where the investigation is at, if there is an investigation, to actually minimize the costs of having employees on suspension, because clearly it is fruitless and wasteful expenditure, to the extent that, of course, as the head of employee relations, I had to try to put stringent rules, if you like, or clauses within the disciplinary code that discourage the whole notion of suspension or suspending people willy-nilly. It's one of the things that I actually wanted to deal with. And unfortunately, whilst the policy may have said good things that needed to happen so that we meet the strategy of reducing costs, it wouldn't happen all the time, because the decisions would be taken above my head, as I have already indicated, that when a decision to suspend an executive is done, it's a decision, it's done. The next thing that needs to be done, at least insofar as I'm concerned or I am called, is to say, ensure that the process is correct. So actually part of the issues that had actually made me want to go, because there were things that I was not meeting in respect of good governance, because I think the whole issue of suspension and how it costs the SABC borders on that. So the cost was one of the areas that I had to look at for the SABC.
Can you help the committee to understand how much cost was we involved in the litigation or settlement of contracts during the period when you were at SABC? I think that's very important. You must remember, one of the primary responsibility of this committee is to establish the financial sustainability of SABC and financial prudence, fiscal prudence as SABC. And I'm drawing your attention to the fact that during 2013 and 14, SABC accounted for 3.4 billion, not million, of irregular expenditure. And maybe I want you to come to zoom into that, ma'am, if you don't mind.
Okay. I'm sorry that I did not prepare anything that was financial.
Okay.
But I think, as I indicated to the Honorable Mugwena, because I think he also asked me the question, it's lots of money, ma'am, and I don't know how to quantify that, other than indicating that it is concerning to have people that are on suspension, sometimes, as you said, frivolously, for things that they're not even supposed to be on suspension, things that could be avoided. To the extent that I know that at some point, which is one of the things that as a practitioner, again, would concern me, that people are going to be scared of making decisions because they are going to, when they make a mistake, depending on who they are, they get punished for making an operational mistake, as I said, depending on who they are. So they would be placed on suspension instead of calling them in to say, what happened here? You know, why did you do this? How can we change this? And I mean, those are basic principles of leadership, in my view, which could deal with the cost issue that you're talking about. But again, with the effective management of the day-to-day operations of the SABC. So in a nutshell, lots of money. I can't, because it has to be accounted on a yearly basis now.
Okay.
To go back 5 years,
yeah,
and say, you know, in 2012 it was this much or that much, I can tell you now, though, it is lots of money.
It's lots. No, thank you. I just wanted to get that indication. Thank you.
Honorable Odiwe.
Thanks, Chair. I just want to check with you, what made you to be at peace with your construction business? Because we did not challenge it.
Oh, sorry. My mic was off. What made you to be at peace with your constructive dismissal? Because I hear you did not challenge it.
Well, I think it's, you know, when you have those intrapersonal conflicts and you say, well, is it worth me going through this? I have a bit of a cushion to find another job rather than being, you know, paying legal costs and, you know, being at the CCMA, having my name dragged, this, that, or the other. I decided that I knew at that particular time that my contract was not going to be renewed once it ended. Why not end it now if I can, because it seemed to have been the norm, by the way, that I was basically following, that the executives or the whoever that is not wanted, they get paid out. Again, shamefully that I sit here and say that, I thought for me to have my integrity still, to be employable and to just have a peace of mind, let me just take what is due to me in respect of what remains in my contract and just make a peaceful, I am leaving, it's done.
Then, in your 5 years with the institution, were there moments where you were allowed to follow policy or you were always adhering to the compelling word must?
Ma'am, actually that's what kept me going, because there was never a day that was the same at the SABC. There were moments, you know, when I would be excited thinking that I'm going to contribute here, this is why I'm here, this is to change things, and of course it wouldn't happen. But I must say there have been moments where policies were adhered to the T. As I said, it kind of vanishes with the higher you go, the colder it becomes. So, it, you know, the notion of it has been decided above my head, how that, you know, and it depends on who you are. So some of them are not as important. Those that are not as important, they would be done to the T, and it would be such a, you know, a fulfilling moment for me, because there's no interference, there, you know, it's done in good faith and in the interest of the SABC. So there have been those moments that I have been happy at the SABC.
From the responses you have given to the previously asked questions, what picture can you draw in as far as labor stability is concerned at the SABC?
Labor stability, wow. A good one. it's a fairly good picture in my view, because when you talk, it's in two folds. Remember, you have your bargaining units within the SABC who are normally quite happy if they are recognized for what they do and the money is going to their bank account. And indeed, one of the good things I must say that Mr. Mutsweneng has done was to ensure that the bargaining unit is kept happy. I will mention that. So when it comes to issues of collective bargaining and ensuring that people are well paid, that part in that sense has been taken care of. However, there have been instances where unions are not happy because they are asking about these executive either bonuses or dismissals or appointments that seemed to be irregular, or so those things would play a role in terms of the instability within labor, because they, especially when the annual reports are out, to say we need you to account and tell us, you know, why this is happening and why this is not happening. So that's just the extent of the instability when people want to know about, you know, things that they have a particular interest in. Otherwise, generally, people are happy because bad things, for a lack of a better word, would happen with the executives.
Thanks, John.
Honourable Fanda.
Thanks, Chair. Ms. Ngosi, I just want to talk a little bit more about the State Security Agency, because like Honourable Swat, I'm quite shocked that the State Security Agency was involved in employee relations at the SABC. Now, we know that the matter with Mr. CSC was not the first time the SSA was involved. We received information that in August 2015, the State Security Agency asked staff in the Durban offices to vacate the offices. They spent 2 or 3 hours doing, you know, we don't know what they were doing, but then they threatened staff should they speak about what they were doing in those offices. Did you ever, as a manager of labor relations, receive information of similar operations by the State Security Agency at other SABC offices?
I think except the incident you're mentioning in Durban, which I did not know anything about, of course, until it happened. And, of course, I took interest because employees were jittery about it. And I was asking around about what was going on, whether it was true or not. And, you know, I was given the answer about, yes, they had been given access by the security leg of the SABC to go in. And it was kind of, you know, played down. And this incident that I had mentioned, that I did not know where, you know, Mr. Idani Zaisi was concerned. Those were the only incidents I had known at the SABC where State Security Agency was involved. Other than us perhaps asking policy matters that, for instance, relate to vetting, if you want to make a policy decision about whoever that is fit to hold office, for instance, in procurement, or, you know, all those policy issues where you just ask those questions for guidance. But the investigation and the involvement in the manner that it was said they were, it was my first time. I've never heard of it before.
Would you say there was a general fear among staff, executives and journalists? Was there fear that their phones were tapped? Do they feel like they were constantly under surveillance by the State Security Agency? Did you ever receive reports of
Yes, I mean, it was particularly in the past year, you know, this year. People, there's an atmosphere of paranoia.
Mm-hmm.
And even when colleagues are talking, they're scared. You know, they look around to find out, or even, you know, there's paranoia about who's listening into their conversations, because people think that they are tapped. And if you ask them, it's the people that are scared to be tapped by, for instance, either the State Security Agency acting for Mr. Motsoeneng, for instance. And I'm just, you know, telling it as it is, because that's the feeling that I've actually gathered about the, where the paranoia comes from.
All right. Were you at any point requested to give legal advice about the appointment of Mr. Motsoeneng as permanently a COO? Were you ever approached and asked to give an opinion about that?
Never, ma'am.
All right. Would you say that if I were to, from listening to what you're saying and also reading the information that I have in front of me, that Mr. Motsoeneng willfully ignored legal advice, purged staff that disagreed with him, and escalated the SABC's legal costs? Because looking at the annual report, the SABC's legal costs from the 2014-15 to 2015-16 financial year doubled in millions. It went from 171 million to 257 million. Would you say that because Mr. Motsoeneng ignored legal advice, purged staff, the SABC incurred millions in legal expenses?
I can confirm, ma'am, that there definitely would have been legal costs that would have been avoided at the SABC if only we took legal advice as it came. And as I indicated, there had been instances where my function as the head of employee relations, I would, based on the knowledge I have of labor law and people that do well in labor law, that we would brief, which either were ignored, even from my own unit, without necessarily going externally, and we would go external to get legal advice, or we would incur costs because we either would lose a case and would still pay for those services. But it was not, my understanding is that it was not only confined to my area, but it's a spread within the SABC where legal advice had been sought, ignored, and we had lost cases in general. But I'm happy to talk about my own area. I'm not oblivious to the fact that there would have been others that have been lost as a result of legal opinion not accepted or taken by the SABC.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chauke?
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm going to have only the rest of my time, I'll donate it to Honorable Loliwe. The point I want to come in with is that SABC is a national key point. And therefore, the issue of the state security becomes very critical, especially on the issue of vetting of executive, those people who are there. It's unfortunate, Chair, that we started vice versa. The state security is supposed to be telling us, who are these people? If you have not vetted them at a national key point, what does it tell you? Therefore, the question I'm going to ask you is that this executive, in your knowledge, why they were not vetted? The second question is that the people who dealt with who were outsourced to deal with the DC of Mr. Motsoeneng, who was that company? Maybe you can share with us the people that dealt with who were outsourced to deal with the DC. So the rest of the remaining questions I can give them to Honorable Loliwe.
Okay. All right. I think the SABC was actually grappling to vet the executives that had already been there. Right, I'm going to venture into that, although it's not necessarily my area, but because the executives had already been there and this was not, part of their conditions of employment or not contained in their contract, so that's why I indicated that where state security agency would have been contacted, in my view, was about policy vetting of the executives, and that's the acceptable, in my view, point of contact for the SAA, which the SABC was grappling with, because they wanted to find out how they could incorporate that into the policy such that the executives are vetted. I don't know why the executives were not vetted, but there certainly was a good case to argue about the involvement of the SAA in that particular sense, if it answers the question. The second one, the second one, I thought I got it. Now it just escaped me. Honorable Chuck, sorry.
Outsourcing?
The outsourcing. Thank you. My understanding is that the outsourcing went to Werksmans. So the lawyers that had been appointed, and I'm sure you had read the newspapers, initially were Werksmans that were given the job. And my understanding is that it was the Minister of Communications that handled that particular transaction of appointing whomever it was that was going to be representing, whether it was the SABC, whether it was the minister and the board to represent the SABC or whoever at that particular point. My understanding is that Werksmans withdrew from that particular transaction and somebody else then since came in. The nitty-gritties of what had happened leading Werksmans to withdraw from that matter, say, I have no information whatsoever, and therefore my information in that regard is very limited.
My very last one, therefore, Chair, on the issue of vetting, that, and it's a comment, Chair, it's not going to be a direct question, that the state security gets involved in issues of human resource than to deal with the serious issues of security of the country, by the way, because they say this is about the country. It's a worrying factor, Chair, and it needs to be noted. It needs to be noted at some point the Minister of State Security will have to explain this thing, Chair. Because anyone can stand there in the SABC now as we speak and say, I'm declaring a coup in the country, I'm taking over as the president of the country. Because of the kind of people that we have there that are not known. And that's the issue that I thought, let us note it, Chair, that as we move forward, this is a point that it must be noted and we need to find a way in between now and the end of this commission as to how we deal with that part.
Shall be noted, Mr. Chauke. Honourable Killian.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I absolutely concur with Honourable Chauke. The group executive for risk actually brought it to our attention that by law, all of those people at the top should be vetted and should have security clearance. And that was not done. So I think it is an important matter that we must register. But just to come back to the issue, the public protector was in fact investigating a purge or an alleged purge, and she felt that it was substantiated through her investigation. We now faced, would you describe the most recent, the new, well, 9 months, the last of your tenure at the SABC, where you saw things happening in, and going the wrong way. Would you describe that as a second wave of a purge that took place with very senior people being charged and called to disciplinaries, but actually with a foregone conclusion that they should leave? Would you please comment on that?
Well, Honourable, I think I had indicated that certainly there would be sometimes some sort of basis to correct behavior at certain levels. I had indicated that I would have recommended differently in terms of how the SABC would have dealt with some of the issues that the SABC was grappling with. However, with some of the transactions, in fact, with these that had been mentioned, it had been clear to me that these employees, these executives, were mostly the executives that would not be given a second chance for one reason or the other if they had erred to be at the SABC, and therefore the decision would have been taken that because you are not towing the line, whatever that is, therefore you are not going to be part, or you don't form the part of the vision of the SABC, again, whatever that is. And so, as I indicated, I also could see that I was also not in that vision myself, hence my volunteering. And therefore I'm saying that directly or indirectly, these people, most of them in fact, I'm sure other organizations would be happy to have the caliber of the people that the SABC, and I'm not saying this because I am one of those, but just looking at the executives that are there, in my view, these are mostly capable people that you could find. And this is relative to where I have been. I've worked for National Treasury, I've worked for Transnet, I've worked for a union, I've been around in order for me to be able to make the comparison. So relatively speaking, if anybody employs these people, these are engineers, these are accountants, these are legal, these are people that have studied and have been working, in my view, very hard and honestly for the SABC. Therefore, yes, I would say that.
Were anybody ever charged for transgressions of the PFMA, specifically Section 51.1b, where effective steps need to be taken against those who are guilty of irregular expenditure, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, etc.? Were anybody in your term and tenure at the SABC ever charged for those transgressions by law?
I cannot remember that there could have been charges with one or two GMs or managers at the SABC charged with fruitless, you know, wasteful and fruitless expenditure at the SABC. There certainly were those. But if your question is that it's at the top, at the executive level or executive directors or whatever the case is, no. But certainly at manager level, you didn't do this. The transport did not arrive. It went and it didn't come back with employees. Therefore, that was a fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Yes, there have been people that had been charged for that. But in respect of the people higher up, I have to really dig my mind to find any who were charged for wasteful and...
How would you describe the relationship?
Unfortunately, ma'am, that is our time up. Thank you, Ms. Nkosi, for coming through. Thank you very much. And also for understanding when we made you sit whilst we were doing our own internal business. As we say to everybody else, but before I even do that, is there anybody from the SABC who wants to cross-examine the evidence that we've just heard? Nobody. Thank you very much. Ms. Nkosi, thank you so much. As we've said to everybody else, our process ends on the 28th or thereabouts of February. So as you go home or wherever you are and you remember something that you think will assist in strengthening our report, please feel free to talk to us. This is not the end of the road, but there is something that you can bring it to the attention of the committee and we'll share it with our members as and when we get it. Other than that, have yourself a very Merry Christmas and a prosperous New Year.
Thank you,
thank you so much, ma'am.
Thank you very much.